This is CliffCentral.com.
So I made it just before the traffic completely destroyed me this morning. Can you imagine how it would be for people in about an hour's time, right?
Ooh, it's just warming up.
No intro music or anything. Let's just get straight into it.
Was it a stationary truck?
No, it's one person. This is what I always say. If you think you don't matter, if you think you don't matter in the world, just have a car accident on the
N1.
Yeah. Suddenly everybody in South Africa knows who you are. They might not know your name, but they know you exist.
Yeah.
You could put thousands of people into a position where they're no longer really in charge of what's going on around them. It's madness.
Especially on a Monday morning, putting everyone's days into disarray.
Yeah. So, how's everybody? What's happening?
Good.
Yeah? Good weekend?
Yeah. I had an interesting time because my mum and dad adopted a little doggy from a shelter.
Nice.
And he arrived. We waited for him. We were all there, sitting on the lawn, had his toys. And
what kind of dog is it?
He's a Jack Russell.
Oh, nice.
He's 14 months old.
It's very brave of your parents to adopt a Jack Russell.
Yeah, well, we've had them all our lives, so we know them. But he's
14
months old, and he was taken to the pound when he was 4 months old.
So what?
All he knows. He's been there for 10 months.
Hell, that's a long time to be in a pound.
Mm. And he's so calm and lovely, and I don't know why he hasn't been adopted.
And I'm grateful to be adopted.
Yeah.
Because my parents have got also a Jack Russell.
Yeah.
And she's just, the whole time, she's like, thank you, thank you, thank you. She's got this look on her face like, thanks, did I say thanks yesterday? She's actually got this expression of gratitude the whole time.
Oh, man.
How was your weekend, Ben?
Well, Gareth, inspired by our Barry Ronga chat on Friday, I decided to watch two movies on a Friday night.
Very good.
And I can tell you that Aiden Cleaver, it's The Wound.
Oh, you saw it.
Oh, yeah, gosh. It basically is Brokeback Mountain for Western water.
Oh, really?
That's all it is. You go to the mountain, there's some gayness that's frowned upon. It doesn't end well. And ultimately, it's the most shocking love story you could think of.
Jesus.
And
heavy going though.
Spoiler alert: someone dies at the end.
Okay.
And ultimately, it just showcases that culture is very stupid. I think that's the big take out there.
Shit.
I'll give it a 7 out of 10. But
a scintillating 7.
Well,
a sordid 7.
A sordid 7. Let's go with a sordid 7. It's a very well produced movie. It's a very well done production. But like, it just highlights our culture. It's just getting dumber and dumber as we get more and more progressive in life.
Well, I wonder how many people would be upset by that and think, oh, well, Ben's being very insensitive to our culture and our background. And what you're saying is not that our culture is stupid.
No,
you're just saying
universal.
All culture is stupid.
I'm saying all culture is ultimately stupid.
So all tradition
becomes redundant.
You think it's unnecessary?
It mostly becomes redundant. How you're now doing something that's putting people at a medical risk, and then the fact that you can't be gay in any society is stupid.
Yeah.
And ultimately, as you see when this movie ends, you'll see the point I'm making. It's just stupid.
So what would Barry Ronga give it out of 10?
I think Barry Ronga would have given it a naughty 9.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's quite a lot.
Well,
what was the other movie?
Lost in Translation.
Better?
From decades ago.
Yeah, I felt that was something I had to watch at some stage, and it was okay.
Mm.
It was
I'm sorry, Ben.
Yeah, I didn't think it was amazing.
Nah. It was an airy fairy 6.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's pretty low, very low score there.
No, but
Ben Carpenter.
But the thing is, like, I really love watching movies that are so-called controversial because there's obviously a design to make you think.
Yeah.
And when you watch this movie and you think, like, what a waste of life that we have to, like, act in a certain way and do certain things and feel ashamed of certain things. It's just stupid. It really is. It's just such a waste of time. And you spend your entire life living in either guilt or grief or some other horrible thing starting with G.
Well, I know it's probably something that has been said a million times, but I do think that a lot of us are trapped by religion and by culture and by tradition and by tribe and by all of that stuff. It doesn't matter whether you're born into a supremely kind of left-wing, open-minded, globalized family, or if you're born into a very conservative family of whatever kind that is. Because I think it holds people back. It like stops individuals from being individuals. It forces you and it molds you into what the group identity wants you to be. And I think we're learning slowly but surely through social media of all things that that's a dangerous place to be. If you're going to let your decisions, your ideas, your understanding of the world be dictated by other people who are like you for whatever reason, genetically or by hair color or by race or by political philosophy, or whatever, it's just dangerous. Because the minute you jump out of the box, the minute you have something to say that isn't congruent with what everybody else in that group, for whatever reason it's constituted, has to say, boom, you're out. You're a danger. And they hunt you down. They want you expurgated. You know? They want you changed. They want you thrown out. Mm. Made different. Anyway, my weekend was pretty good. I slept so well on Saturday night. I had a reasonably early evening on Saturday.
And so then this whole new bed thing's working well.
Oh, my God, I'm loving it. And then I woke up late on Sunday morning. But then last night I couldn't sleep properly for some reason.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like 3.5 hours, and I've got quite a lot to do today, so I'm a bit annoyed with myself.
Mm. Yeah, that Sunday sleep is so vital. It is how you tee off the week, really. Mm.
It's the best.
Mm. And often not spent well because you're a little bit anxious because of stuff that's going to happen.
Well, in your case, just excited.
Because Monday's your favorite time of the week.
Sure, excitement.
Yeah. Leanne loves it. Sure. a friend of mine sent this voice note, which I thought you might enjoy, to one of our little groups. You know, these groups that everybody has. Mm. So this one is about the end of the week and what people deal with, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to play you. It's not long, so don't panic. If it's not right up your street, you don't have to worry. But I'll play this for you, and maybe you agree with him or not. And it's quite cute because what he does is he sort of goes at how everybody feels about the end of the week. Listen to this quickly. Oh, no, isn't it working? What's going on here? God's sake, technology let me down. Yeah.
Happy Monday.
It's like, it's a little bit depressing to know.
Yeah, that's what it
is. I think the problem with Carte Blanche is that it signifies the end of the weekend. And none of us like the ending of anything. It's like, it's a little bit depressing to know that whatever has just happened is over. It's like done. It's almost like the last thing that Stephen Hawking ever said in his life.
Oh. Okay, so there we go. I think that's how everybody feels on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
But your weekend wasn't... I mean, both of you caught up on The Bachelor, obviously.
Yes.
You have to have her.
Because the two of you were an episode down.
Yes.
Yeah. And what do you think?
Well, I still think... I think these girls are fairly embarrassing. I mean,
I still find it difficult to watch.
You kind of spoilt it for me. Well, I mean, you didn't spoil it for me. I spoilt it for myself by hearing a lot of the stories on Friday.
Well, there weren't a lot of stories. We were just referencing people. I mean, it's not like I just gave you the story to a movie. You know?
Yeah.
It wasn't a big spoiler.
No, it wasn't a spoiler because we know what's going on here. There's going to be more eliminations, mm-hmm. and eventually it's down to three. And by the way, we pulled the names out of the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know who we're backing in this so far, who our people are that are coming out. Now, if we win, then that person wins money, but obviously they have the prestige of being
gloating,
able to...
Gloating rights.
Yeah, so you've got Shazan, Kerry, Gina, and Jenna, as Leanne points out, all the jizzes.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Kelly, Kim, Mabali, Edith, Shelley. C's got Shanil.
Mali.
Sorry.
Yeah?
Muscle memory. Shanil, Jacqueline, Michelle DP... Annaline,
Michelle DP, Jesus.
That's yes. And then Leanne's got Michelle R, Tenjiwa, America, Natasha.
America.
Oh, sorry, it's all like that name, America. All right, so that's how we're going to go when it comes down to the breakdown. I did enjoy the show. It was fun. I mean, it's just mindless viewing, right?
Mm.
Well, that's what Lucy, who sent us a mail, kind of alluded to. She says, please continue to cover Bachelor every week. I'm 35 years old. I've been watching Bachelor since 2003 when the first Bachelorette started. And I listen up to 7 different podcasts every week that covers The Bachelor in the States, plus YouTube channels.
Wow, she listens to 7 different podcasts every week about The Bachelor in America. That's madness.
I bet one of them's Roses and Rosé. It's very funny. She does a whole you know, looking back at what happened while she drinks wine.
Leanne, the closet bachelor specialist. It's so refreshing to hear your perspective from someone that never watched it before. None of my friends or family have any interest in the show and keep saying it's all fake, but I love watching the show and following the lives of the people from all the bachelor shows. Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor Pad, Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelor Winter Games.
Good God. Are there that many?
Yes, there are, and I watch them all.
Even after working 50-hour weeks, watching one of the Bachelor shows helps me forget how tired I am and how negative the world is around me. There's no awkward bit dating or deciphering cryptic messages or dick pics from online dating. Instead, there's a glamorous, fast-paced, fancy dining and charming conversation. And in that moment, it brings me so much joy and positive energy and makes me believe in pure, uncomplicated love, or at least human connection. Wow. So that's your good points. I know I sound naive considering how low the success rate is, but all the people that goes on the show says the show helped them clarify exactly what they want in a relationship and helped them understand themselves a lot better. So as long as you don't become a villain of the show, you come out winning in some way. In the 1 hour of the week, when
I watch the show, obviously.
When I watch the show, every worry and stress in the world falls away, and all that matters is finding your soulmate and focusing on the one agenda. My husband runs away whenever I play the show. I hope that someday I can meet other people who love the show as much as me, and there can be bachelor viewing parties in Joburg like there is overseas.
No, can you imagine? Maybe we've got to do one for the finale.
Let's do one for the finale. Let's get Sia in a suit. Maybe we can have Damon as the mock bachelor, bring him back. As you arrive, you got a red carpet, and he's at the end of it.
How did you get to that point? Oh.
Can you imagine?
There's certain visuals that people just don't need to have on a Monday morning.
Lucy sounds like a bachelor superfan.
Seven different podcasts every single week.
Well, she's found her escape window. We've all got these different things, and she's pinned it all on The Bachelor.
Well, at the risk of pissing off and boring to death everyone who isn't watching the show, here's one more email. Because we are getting a lot of these. This is from Reno. He says, all right, here's his critique. Number one, being a social media influencer is not a real job. This is what he's learned from The Bachelor. Okay? So I think he's referring to Mbali, who's a social media influencer. Mm. It's not a real job. I agree with you. That kiss in Cape Town was staged. So that's now from the second episode, right?
Yes, when Kelly and Lee were on their date.
Those were pecks on the lips. A first kiss is definitely not whatever that was. There was no passion or lust whatsoever.
Oh, dear.
Do we agree?
Oh, I agree. It was kind of awkward. It was like, should I kiss you once? No, I shall try kiss you again. No, maybe I should kiss you again.
I didn't really remember the kiss. Did she move in on him or did he move in on her?
There were a few pecks. Like next to each other. But also, I don't know if South Africans are used to completely making out in front of a camera, you know?
Yeah, then
unless you're a porn star.
See, but there was passion in their hands, because I think, if I remember correctly, Kelly brought her hands up to Lee's face.
Oh.
That says something.
Yeah, and she was kind of stroking his forearm with her thumb. Oh,
body language, y'all.
Stroking his forearm.
That's how it starts.
Sexual. Then his next point is, who the hell decides to cuddle together in the pool when they're freezing? Get out and get warm by putting clothes on.
So true.
Reno's very sharp.
So true.
That's right. Gina is one of those self-righteous people, says Reno, who loves to involve themselves in all the drama. Well, that's a very mean thing to say so close to the beginning of the show, but all right. The girls are so dramatic, it reminds me of a grade 9 high school class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm convinced the bachelor is in the closet. Someone should tell him it's okay to come out. Gay people are cool. Well, that's Alan Ford's opinion too. But then Alan Ford thinks everyone he meets is gay, secretly gay, and they're just keeping it from him because, you know, they want to play hard to get. That's how Leanne sees it. I mean,
Leanne, not Leanne. Alan Ford.
That's Alan because Ford Alan's sees the always on. Jeepers, like he's hungry, that guy. Yeah.
No, I mean, he's found love now, guys.
I don't even mean that in a like, nutritional sense. He's just angry.
The model who fainted probably had low blood sugar due to not having food.
Mm. Sure.
Reno being practical. And the show is hilarious because of the cringeworthiness. And then he says, I don't really know any of their names.
Yeah.
Bring on the bitchiest bachelor review. Have a great day, Reno. All right. There we go. Mm. We're recording some more of these today, so I'll read one more email before we get to the things you need to know. The blind history podcasts, which seem to be received very well. A couple of people like them. Some people want them longer. Some people want them shorter. We'll just have to feel our way through it. But this one's from... doesn't say. Duncan. Okay, Duncan. I know this is long, but bear with me. Your first history podcast was awesome. You should be proud of yourself. I love the continuously adjusting your podcast network to make things relevant. I have a massive interest in history, but I've never really spent enough time on it. Part of the problem is that I work in the tech industry. I find myself spending a lot of time reading on the latest trends in my field of work, rather than reading, for example, about the Ottoman Empire or the Battle of Waterloo. And don't feel bad about that, Duncan, because I think that's how a lot of people feel.
Yep.
Which is why podcasting is so cool. I hate to be obvious about this, but it can fit into your life. You don't have to dedicate time to it. You know, if you're watching a YouTube video, I always feel like I could be doing something else. Even if it's a good YouTube video, like I should be doing something else at the same time.
Mm.
But you can't if it's YouTube because you have to watch. But with podcasts, you can do other things. You don't need to feel guilty about it. Plus, you know, I can go through an audiobook or a podcast much quicker than I'll go through actually a real book or an article, for example. Part of my problem is I don't know where to start. How far do I go back? I have a keen interest in the Middle East, but then again, I don't know anything about my own country, South Africa, or my country of residence, the UK. I recently started preparing for a life in the UK test, which is a prerequisite for me obtaining permanent residence or ultimately citizenship. Yeah, you have to do a test.
Yeah.
To become a UK citizen. It's a very basic book which covers general history, art and culture, sport and politics. This, in combination with your new podcast series, has awakened my interest in reading. But I need to know where to start, so please guide me. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Just find one interesting thing.
What do they say about eating an elephant?
One bite at a time.
That's legal.
But history isn't everybody's cup of tea. You've got to start with something you're interested in. I mean, Ben used to do a show with us called Decades of History, which people liked, because he went through these really terrible people, Idi Amin and Adolf Hitler and Pol Pot and all of those guys, and Ben would give us a kind of synopsis of their lives, and I thought it was pretty fascinating. So maybe it's something that comes out of the Blind History series, and you find you're interested in ancient Rome, for example. That opens up a whole chapter, many multitudes of chapters on ancient Rome, which might keep you busy for the next 5 years. You can't do all of it. I don't know anything about ancient Japanese history. Nothing. Zero. I am as lost as you are. You don't know. Someone who loves history doesn't know everything about history. You get professors who are experts in, you know, medieval Transylvania, but they know nothing at all about the Ottoman Empire. So just choose a little piece and make that yours.
I think Japanese history could be interesting. I know Westworld Season 2, I try to start watching that again.
Mm?
And you get the samurais and the geishas, and they're all very, very angry there.
Well, I'd be fascinated to learn.
Very angry people.
But you've only got one life.
Yeah.
You can't do it all. And history is enormous because it's a story of all people all through the world. At every stage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look at your average week and you're an average person. Now, add hundreds of years to that, to people who actually made empires, and you realize how much you've got. People who actually did more than just eat and shit. And you can see how much you can get through in history.
I really love the show. He finishes by saying, especially the days when Ben and Leanne are on. Oh, isn't that nice?
Aww. Look at that.
Ah, God.
You shady person.
All right, you want to get into some news? Five things you need to know today. Let's not mess around. First thing, Sia, you've got to realize that Ben doesn't care about hurting Gord's feelings or anyone else's.
But Gord cares.
Gord gets so upset.
I know. That's the point.
So sensitive. That's why Ben does it. All right, first things. After weeks of tension, the classes at DUT are set to resume. So, programs at DUT were suspended earlier this month after student Nungisi Madonsela was shot dead during an altercation with security guards at one of the campuses. News 24 previously reported a group of about 30 students stoned in an administration building on the first day of the shooting before proceeding to protest at different university gates. So security at the gates called for backup. A student was shot during the confrontation. Where exactly the student was shot was also expected to form part of an investigation. But in the meantime, it appears everybody is going back to classes. And bear in mind, it's now the 25th of February, so they've lost quite a bit of time. The academic program at all five Durban University of Technology campuses is expected to resume today, after management and the Student Representative Council reached common ground following protests. Who knows whether they're going to get their mattresses like the UKZN people, or whether they're going to get their free education, which Jacob Zuma promised them, or whether that education will be worth anything by the end of it. But these students are pretty desperate. So even if you think that, you know, they're wasting their time, you've got to feel a little bit of sympathy for them because they don't have control. Zizi Kodwa is in big trouble. I don't know if you heard about this.
Yeah.
He's released a statement denying the rape allegations that have been leveled against him. He says it's a dirty tricks campaign against him because a letter was released from an accuser sent to the ANC, replete with what he calls false accusations. The acting spokesperson confirms that he is accused of rape, sexual assault, and drugging two women, but he says he denies the allegations with the contempt they deserve. He says, "I refuse to succumb to extortion and blackmail." Kodwa alleges there are cowards operating from factional dark corners, using women to neutralize him. He says he will not be silenced through a dirty tricks campaign and is considering filing a case of extortion. So who do we believe? Because the woman who wrote this letter seems to be very upset. She seems to be very sincere, but then these letters usually are. And, you know, a lot of people would say, well, you've got to believe the victim. But we know that sometimes that's not the safest way to go.
That you're right, but at the same time, Zizi Kodwa has been denying truth for so long in his role of chief ANC denial expert.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a great track record.
No, it's awkward when your spin doctor is accused of something as awful as rape and can't spin his way out.
So now he's just self-spinning.
Yeah, we'll have to watch this story as it unfolds. Obviously too early to be able to tell what's true and what's not. These are all allegations from both sides. Energy Minister Jeff Radebe says there's no conflict of interest. This sounds like a story we read last week, when Patrice Motsepe said there's no conflict of interest between me and Jeff and Cyril.
I think the statement was just sent on the family WhatsApp group. Yeah. So okay, now everyone say this.
Now Jeff says there's no conflict of interest with Patrice and Cyril in the department's Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers project. After the unions made claims, President Cyril Ramaphosa's decision to unbundle Eskom would benefit Motsepe's firm, African Rainbow Energy and Power.
Yeah, sure. I don't care if Patrice becomes the richest man in the Southern Hemisphere, as long as we have power and we're not paying out of our ass for it. Do we have to care anything more about that?
No, I think you sketched the scenario very well for us, Ben. One other thing you need to know, an Uber driver and another man have been arrested for the robbery and bloody shootout that took place in Edenvall Law School on
Edenvall?
Thursday. Yeah. So apparently an Uber driver.
It was one of the pupils' Ubers.
Oh, Jesus.
That was hijacked by these guys.
Oh, my God.
That's what I heard.
The two robbers died in the shootout at the school, and police later arrested three robbers. A third suspect was found a street away in one of the getaway vehicles in possession of an R5 rifle and pistol.
That's hectic. That's what I got shot with.
Wait.
R5 rifle.
Really?
Yeah.
But the Uber driver was found in possession of the cash believed to have been robbed at gunpoint from the school. So that
he was holding it for the cops, no doubt.
Sure. They were arrested at three separate locations on Friday. The other suspect was found in a hiding place in Edenvale. Police spokesperson Kay Makubela said that so far they've arrested six suspects in connection with the robbery.
Oh, well done, police. A lot of hiding places in Edenvale.
Yeah. Jeez.
Edenvale's full of hiding places.
Who knew?
So that is a little bit of good news. The cops on their toes, paying attention to the story. And in Dhaka in Bangladesh, a flight bound for Dubai from the capital of Bangladesh made an emergency landing after a man attempted to hijack the plane. The suspect, a Bangladeshi, was asked to speak to the country's prime minister before dying from injuries in an exchange of gunfire with military commandos. Mm. I love when a hijacker dies in gunfire. Mm. It's always my favorite way for them to be terminated.
Well, I also don't think hijacking a plane is the smartest thing to do.
No. So the flight, operated by state-run Biman and Bangladesh Airlines, took off from Dhaka at 4:35 p.m. The pilot made the emergency landing in Chittagong after 40 minutes. A crew member reported suspicious behavior by the man. All 143 passengers and 7 crew members aboard the Boeing 737-800 were evacuated safely. Air Vice Marshal Mofidur Rahman said it in news. That's an unfortunate name.
Mofidur.
Yeah, Mofidur wouldn't do so well in South Africa.
No. Apparently they fired at the suspect after he shot at them when they asked him to surrender. So they took him out.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So there, another hijack thwarted by smart people in Bangladesh who just don't take any shit from hijackers. Those are the 5 things you need to know today.
Very good.
Ben thinks we should get rid of the crypto ticker, but let's just do it anyway because we did start this, and I think a lot of people are still in it, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, but Gareth, sometimes when you start something, you've also got to finish it. It's the circle of life, as Elton John always said.
All right, Ben. Well, you and Elton John ponder on that for a little while. Bitcoin, $3,822, and Ethereum, 140 in Ether. What have you got for us in the sport?
Lots of results, Gareth. It was a big weekend in that front. And the Proteas, more specifically, well, they did what they do best.
Which was? Lose.
Well, a negative start to the day, you may say. Yeah, sure, but I mean, come on. How is it that this Proteas team, known for being a test side, a solid test side at that, can suddenly be so god-awful that they lose to Sri Lanka at home? So we've been, okay, let's just go to 1992, after isolation, Clive Rice, white shirts, you know, bowing hands, all that kind of stuff. We came back into the world of cricket. We've only lost at home to England and Australia. Okay? 1992, so before Sia was born.
Right.
We've only lost to those 2 teams. You would think that some star-studded teams from the subcontinent have come over here and maybe what? No, none of them ever won. Some ragtag Sri Lankan bunch rock up here. Oh, none of us really know 3/4 of the names. Just fired their captain, Angelo Matthews, the star player, is not even playing. And these guys managed to get it was a romp, essentially. They won the second test by 8 wickets. The first one was like one of those miracle stories where that Pereira got 150. But in PE, they were just romping, Gareth, all the way.
That word.
Me either, but I mean, we've got to use big words here to describe how dire the situation is with the Proteas. So, let's say they've got 222 in the first innings. And it's like, oh, God, that's terrible. But they bowled Sri Lanka out for 154. Okay, fair. Game on. But then 128. You get bowled out at home for 128. The pitch was not bad. They weren't facing Waka Yunus in his prime. They weren't facing Glenn McGrath in his prime. They weren't facing Shane Warne in his prime on the 5th day. They were facing, get these names, Lakmal Fernando Rajita Imboldinia
Mofidur
Kurunatna De Silva. Any of these guys strike fear into your hearts?
Nope.
I say with no longer tears in my eyes. No, of course not. But anyway, 128 all out. Yay. Faf got a 50. Everyone else just didn't seem bothered. I know they were bothered because they were playing cricket, but I mean, this is how. Anyway, Sri Lanka then went out to bat and they lost all of 2 wickets while chasing down 197. So that's it, 2-0. It is a thrashing. It is a massive embarrassment. Because there's so much sport on right now, and this is the arse end of our cricket season, it may be glossed over a little bit, but this is just bullshit. I mean, what's Otis's game, really? Is he just waiting to be picked up by England and then to earn pounds again?
I think so.
Does Dale Benkenstein have nudes of anybody? What is going on with this coaching staff? How is it you can get players like Dean Elgar, like, his middle name is Dean, I'm up for the fight, Elgar. How is it that he can't even stick around against these guys? Like, what's going on mentally with this team? Eden Mark is one of the brightest young cricketers in the entire world. I mean, he has a flash of brilliance here and there. Umla, gone. Like, what's really, really happening here? Bavuma, I mean, again, like, I still think this guy should probably be in the team. His run, okay, his last 3 innings, disastrous. But still, like, why are these guys not kicking on? Why is he still, like, just this average player? Faf's obviously got his qualities, he's the captain as well, and De Kock is probably our best batsman right now. But I mean, a runner ball wicketkeeper shouldn't be your best test cricket batsman.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bollocks, it just really is. So let's just move straight on, shall we? On to the ODIs, which start on the 3rd of March, mm-hmm. I think. See, I mean, like
you're not even sure.
The wind has been taken out of my sails in the back of that thing.
Ooh.
But essentially, Otis, who I still believe is, you know, you can always call him a Soty, can't you? Because he's got 1 foot here, 1 foot in England.
That's
right. I know it's an old derogatory term, mostly for white people. But I mean, Otis is living it right now.
Mm-hmm.
He's named a squad, a bit batsman light, but this is what happens in SA cricket. When in doubt, pick a whole bunch of all rounders and hope for the best. So that's what they've done. But Lungi Ngidi is back. So there's that. That's a good thing.
We've got to take where we can get.
Afghanistan, though, well, high fives all around for them because right now they're doing well. They had the highest ever T20 international score, over 20 overs, 278 for 3. Hasratullah Zazai, 162 runs of 62 balls. I mean, that's just savage. He hit 16 sixes, 11 fours. And Ireland, well, to their credit, they played bloody well for themselves, but they only got 194 in their 20 overs. 84-run win for Afghanistan. So how about that for a big cricket story? Gosh, that's incredible. It really is. In the Carabao Cup last night, that's the cup that people talk about when there really is nothing else on. That's probably why I was played on a Sunday night. Chelsea, well...
The Carabao Cup.
Yeah. They lost to Man City in penalties. Man City winning that one 4-3 in penalties, but big controversy as the Chelsea manager, Maurizio Sarri, who doesn't seem to have any friends right now, he tried to substitute the goalkeeper, and the goalkeeper was like, no, mate, I'm having a good time. You can get stuffed. And he stayed on.
Wow.
Substitute goalkeeper standing there like, also no, mate. And then they go into the penalty shootout, which then Chelsea lose. Now, Chelsea have been interfering with minors. Sorry.
What?
Chelsea have been doing some underhanded signings of minor footballers. So they are now not allowed to sign new players for the next two transfer windows. So consider how screwed you are. If you want to be a top team, you've got to be human trafficking hard. And to think, I reckon Eden Hazard's going to go quite soon, so then what are they left with? The manager's, I mean, living on borrowed time right now. It's what happens, because people start talking about player revolts and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, Man City first, yeah, there we go. There's a big title for them. No, it's probably the small one. But still, it is a win. A win is a win. In other football news from the weekend, everyone was obviously focused on the big Liverpool versus Man United match.
I know Anthea was. It's a big part of her weekend.
Yeah. She's rolling here, looking quite worse for wear. Obviously, she celebrates it afterwards. But it was a very, very dour match. 0-0. Which do mean Liverpool go top. They're 1 point ahead of Man City. Huh. Same amount of games played. But they'll be, thinking it's a missed opportunity. Because when you want to win this league, draws aren't like kissing your sister. It's like kicking yourself in the shin. Equally unattractive prospect,
that's
really.
The quote of the day.
Yeah. Well, Arsenal, they beat Southampton, which is great. Not that it's going to mean anything, but there we go. 2-0 winners. Watford, they got they absolutely thrashed Cardiff City. Shame Cardiff. After that guy died in that plane crash, it's going from bad to worse for them. They still haven't worked out how they're ethically going to pay the thing as well. When I say the thing, I mean the transfer. West Ham beat Fulham 3-1. Spurs, Harry Kane was back. He scored a goal, but not enough. Burnley beat them 2-1. And Crystal Palace were big winners over Leicester City 4-1. Lots of rugby to get into over the weekend. It was obviously Super Rugby, which started out with the Highlanders beating the Reds narrowly, 36-31. They had a couple of surprises.
Mm-hmm.
The Waratahs only beat the Sunwolves 31-30. Good on the Sunwolves. They should play all their matches in Japan. I don't know why they dick around in Singapore, because nobody watches there.
Right.
Anyway, Crusaders, they're far too strong for Hurricanes, 38-22. Then the Brumbies. Oh, they gave the Chiefs six of the best trousers down, 54-17 the final score there. And the Sharks were equally impressive against the Blues, 26-7. The Stormers, how the hell did they win this one? Well, I could tell you why. Because the ref was an ex-Stormers player, everyone said.
So is that much cheating?
And he missed a clear penalty towards the end. Stormers capitalized that on that. They won 19-17 with a late converted try. But more drama, because this whole Marvel idea is not working.
Is it not? People don't love it?
No, they just haven't quite work out. Everyone was so obsessed with what they looked like, they didn't realize that when these guys play against each other, these jerseys look the same. All Marvel superheroes look the same, right? They've got blue and red and black.
Mm.
That's their vibe. So at halftime, the Stormers had to change out of their Stormers jerseys and into the away Stormers jersey.
Oh, Jesus.
And with that, it was then Stormers versus the lion spiders and, yeah, anyway. And then the Hagawara. They hosted the Bulls in the rain and they won 27-12. Which just goes to show that I think the South African Conference does have some uphill issues this year. I really do.
Not the least of which is the outfits they're wearing.
Yeah. In Six Nations rugby, wow, Wales, they beat England 21-13. Ah, and poor man's Ricky Gervais, Warren Gatlin, he was just over the moon with that. Over the moon. What an incredible result that is. France beat Scotland 27-10. And then Ireland had to come back late to try overcome Italy. How embarrassing is that? 26-16. Oh,
that's pretty horrible.
And then, of course, Gareth, the big highlight from the weekend was at the Club de Golf de Pultepec, where Dustin Johnson held on for his third title. He's now won it. He loves the Club de Golf de Pultepec. Third title there. 21 under par with rounds of 61, 67, 66, and 66. He won by 5 over Rory McIlroy, who put on a bit of a late charge, but it was never enough. And Kiridash Appy Barnrat bringing out third place along with Paul Casey and Ian Poulter.
You have to be making this shit up.
Yes. Who's that lady?
Nailed that.
Appy Barnrat.
Excuse me?
It's not a lady, it's
the man. Who was that?
Very dear. Thailand's finest, you seem to be making remarks about here.
And their name is?
Kiridash Appy Barnrat.
There we go.
All right, very good.
That's your sport for this Monday.
Thank
I'll
you,
see
Ben.
See you again on Wednesday.
Oh, so much good stuff. All right, Ben Karpinski with the sport. Oh, are you ready for Anthea Gardner to give you the latest in what's going on with your money? The Money Shot. Every Monday, we check in on the economy at large. We go into some serious stories. And remember, on Thursday, she gave us a little insight into what the budget has. So for this morning, let's not delay. Let's get straight to Anthea Gardner.
Ba-ba-da, ba-da-ba-ba, ba-ba-da. She works hard for my money, Anthea. She works hard for your money, Anthea. She works hard for her money, so we better treat her right, Anthea.
Yes. Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, everybody. All beautiful people.
So the budget now, has everybody settled into this? Have we found any more interesting things that you didn't tell us about on Thursday?
No, but I think I gave everyone a bit of a shock on Thursday when I said that we were going to be downgraded, because I got quite a few messages from our listeners saying, oh my God, are we going to get downgraded? What must I do with my investments? Where's this going? So I thought I'd better give everybody a little bit of insight.
Okay.
I mean, I think... And I guess the shock is that really I'm calling a downgrade when previously I've said, you know, we can stave this off, and now suddenly I've changed my mind and gone, well, actually, we're in it so deep now that let's just get it out the way. It's coming. What's going to happen is that markets are going to be volatile. So I think for the first half of this year, leading up to the election, not much will happen. I think the equity markets, your share portfolios will be okay. In fact, you could see a little bit of a rally kind of catching up from last year. Shares really are looking quite cheap. And I see Donald Trump this weekend, President Trump, sorry, this weekend, kind of back down on the China-US trade relations and the tariff, saying that, you know, everything's going to be okay. We'll come to some agreement. He's going to host President Xi Jinping at Mar-a-Lago. Funny that.
Mar-a-Lago. Very, very good place. Beautiful there.
For trade relations.
Oh. The Southern White House.
So I think for the share market, stay invested in the share market for the first 6 months of the year up to kind of at the end of elections.
Right.
Nothing's going to happen. And the volatility will kind of subside. But then I think by medium-term budget speech, we're likely to get downgraded. The rand is going to blow out. So if you see any opportunities when the rand is a little bit stronger, buy dollars.
Hmm.
Right? And then when the rand blows out and it's weaker, you sell your dollars and buy rands again. So okay. That's the strategy for the rand. What will happen with bonds is the yield, because that's how we measure returns.
When is all of this likely to happen?
The downgrade, nobody knows, but I think October, around medium-term budget speech.
I don't think I have enough rands to buy a dollar. That's the problem.
No.
Yeah, that is a problem. It doesn't take much. You
some
just
practicality
need a
from Leanne.
You know, I think we can compare it to Brazil, because Brazil and Russia are probably the closest economies to ours, commodity markets, emerging markets. Brazil got downgraded last year, and I've got a nice little table in front of me. If you compare their interest rates with ours, Our 10-year bond, which is kind of the quintessential benchmark, is at about 9.2 or 9.1 at the moment, and Brazil, 8.95. And they're two notches below junk status. So what happens, as you can see, bond yields blow out, and then they retract again. So what you want to do for October is save some money, keep some powder dry to invest in the fixed income market, whether you're buying money market probably won't change that much, but any sort of income fund or flexible income fund or bond fund to put some money into it in October would be very nice, because then you're getting a yield of, well, wherever it blows out to, 11.5, 12 is my prediction. And to get 11.5% return on your money when you're only getting, I don't know, 4 or 5 at the bank, mm-hmm. is definitely worth it. And that's the, I'm talking about the government bond now. So that's like the kind of guaranteed won't default bond.
Okay.
Right.
But you got everybody in a panic.
I did. I'm sorry. But you do need to position yourself quite cleverly for this, I think. And then the other thing you need to think about this week is tax-free savings, because it's the end of the year on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important. If you're going to be invested anywhere and you've got 5 years at least, to put your money into a tax-free savings account. If you've already got hashtag invest bundles, then it's easy to do. You just go online and you invest. You can invest up to 33,000 Rand.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the government basically saying that we will not tax the profits or returns on those investments. You can put in up to 33,000 Rand per annum into your tax-free savings account. It has to stay there for 5 years minimum, I think. And if you miss this year, you can't double it next year. So you can't accumulate your tax-free savings allowance, right? Wow. So if you've got any money in a fixed deposit or sitting in the bank, it doesn't have to be 33,000 Rand. It can be 500 Rand.
Okay.
Don't miss the opportunity.
We like that.
Yeah. It's absolutely worth doing.
Sure. All right. Sounds good. So tax-free savings, take advantage while you can. Discovery, while we're doing things that need to be saved, because Discovery, obviously, have taken a bit of a hit on the balance sheet with the bank.
That's right, yes. So we spoke last week very briefly about, they put out a trading statement and we could see it was coming. Like, just the trading statement alone kind of was a warning to last week's results.
What do they say in these trading statements that makes you go, ooh?
So a listed company has to put out a trading statement if their results are going to be 20% different from the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a 20% change in earnings or profits or revenues or that sort of thing, then they'll put out a trading statement. And in the results, so they said, you know, well, earnings per share are going to be down by between, I think they said, oh, I can't remember now. Like, they said maybe down between 15 and 20%.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of how it is. Headline earnings per share fell 18%, so that's horrific. Normalized profit decreased by 4%, which for Discovery is just awful. But all of this can be explained away, actually, because the company, Discovery themselves, are investing in a number of new initiatives, including the bank, right? So they've got about five. Discovery Bank, that cost them 2.6 billion Rand. Discovery Business Insurance, they spent 92 million Rand in launching that. They've launched something called Umbrella Funds, which is a platform for pension, provident, and preservation funds. They spent 140 million Rand launching that last year. Vitality Invest, they spent 612 million Rand. That's the UK business, where they're trying to incentivize consumers to save for more and for longer. UK business. It's like a direct-to-consumer business. And then Vitality One, which is their technology platform, they spent 552 million Rand.
Sure.
I saw a very interesting tweet by Michael Jordan, and I missed the graph in the presentation, actually, where he showed that Discovery investments, anything that Discovery has started, takes 5 years before it gets out of this what we call a hockey stick. So when you invest something, your profits are much lower, your revenue is lower, and then suddenly when the business turns and makes profit, it takes about 5 years. We call this hockey stick because it looks like a hockey stick on the graph.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly profits and revenues exponential. So 5 years on average.
And they're only starting now. So
exactly.
We're looking at, yeah, we're looking at 2024.
But Discovery's kind of what you call the handle of the hockey stick is very sharp. So when they start making profits, they make exponential profits, extraordinary profits.
Hmm. How do we know when you're at the bottom of that hockey stick curve, though? Because that's the time to buy.
Yeah, that's that's the difficulty, right? You only know once it's turned. Hindsight is 20/20 and all that.
Sure. So at the moment, it's sliding.
I'm afraid so, on that downward trajectory.
All right, First Rand.
Yeah, they released a trading statement as well. Very disappointing. They're guiding for IFRS. You know, IFRS is this accounting international something, financial regulation.
No, of course I don't know. Why would you?
Oh, don't you know?
No.
You have your own business. You should know. IFRS. You report.
No. I don't know about that.
We need to have a word with your accountant.
All right.
Earnings would be 22% to 24%, which implied a growth rate of 4% on profit.
And people are unhappy about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because First Rand, you're normally First Rand, like you're looking at First Rand ROIs, we always talk about this, don't we, because we love this bank, of double digit up to 22% mm-hmm. growth. And if, but that IFRS earnings includes Discovery Card. And remember they had to sell Discovery last year?
Yeah.
Because Discovery are launching this bank?
Right.
So do you think that's impacted? So if you exclude that, oh, absolutely. Oh. Yeah, so that's huge. If you exclude that, and what we call continuous growth. So you, if you take out kind of the profits they've been making from Discovery Card and all Discovery Insurance and all of that, or their holding, I should say, in Discovery, then it doesn't look so great, actually. Mm. And that's a shame. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And that really speaks again to the economy and the consumer.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, Truworths?
So Truworths' share price had a nice little jump last week when they reported results. I'm not sure the jump in the share price was warranted. The only thing it really did show that Truworths were able to contain their costs very well. So they're kind of looking at cost growth of about 5%, which is not bad in this environment, especially if you consider that your inflation rate is around that, right? Mm. And people are getting increases and things are costing more and the rand's weaker, blah, blah, blah. So many things that impact that that cost. Also, expansion of stores is included in the cost. The problem was, in my opinion, so the market seems to disagree with me, obviously. But in my opinion, the problem was that revenue growth didn't keep up with it. So revenue growth was only 1%. And then if you combine the two in what we call jaws, you can mm-hmm. see how it narrows and widens, right? That's jaws, yeah. Kind of the one grows. The costs have to be contained and the revenue has to grow to work.
Got you.
And if it's in reverse, then it narrows the discount. It just, yeah, it looks difficult, I think. Margins are under pressure. South African margins were 10 basis points or 0.1% lower. And 70 basis points, lower in the UK. And I think that's got something to do with Brexit in the UK operations for Truworths.
Mm.
So Brexit definitely taking its effect there.
All right, and finally, Anglo-American.
Yeah, Anglo-American reported pretty good stuff. I mean, this is, you know, commodities have rallied recently and commodity companies have done really well to either sell off non-core assets or deleverage their balance sheet. Anglo-American are looking particularly exciting because they've got a very strong balance sheet. Their net debt to EBITDA, which is earnings before interest, depreciation, tax and amortization, so basically earnings, kind of real earnings,
mm-hmm.
Is 0.3 times. Normally, you're looking for a commodity company of between 2 and 3 times, and this is 0.3 times. So really good. They're like very low on debt at the moment. But then commodity companies just have not been expanding. They've spent nothing on capex. And so you can imagine, you know, the debt. They're paying off their debt, basically. I think people are a little bit nervous about the fact that their payout ratio is a bit skinny, as we call it. It's like a 40% payout ratio because that's our cash in hand, right? That's where you and I get our dividends, mm-hmm. the payout ratio. And then investors are a bit worried that their balance sheet is getting a bit lazy. So the idea is really to have a bit of debt in company. If you're not taking on debt and if you're not expanding the business, then what are you doing? You're going backwards, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, Anglo-American, I would say, like, I'm enjoying this commodities rally because I've had a couple of commodity shares in my portfolios. And the question is, where to from here? Will the commodities rally end? Because I think high level, everyone's worried about China growth, global earnings, global growth. I don't think the world's going into recession this year, but I think next year you're probably looking, things are going to be a bit lean globally, like America and China.
Don't tell us that. We thought that maybe, just maybe, we would stop being so lean, and then maybe the rest of the world would carry on being as abundant as they've been, but now you're spoiling it for us on both fronts.
Yeah, we're a little bit late to the party, eh? Everyone's leaving and getting ready to go home, getting their Ubers, and we're, where's the party?
Yeah, how embarrassing.
Yeah.
We're stuck at the bar with someone hideous. That's South Africa's economy at the moment. Thank you, Anthea.
Pleasure, guys.
All right, very good. Anthea Gardner and the Money Shot. It's time for Said by Sia. Where is he?
Oh, dear.
Has he left the building?
He's kind of crucial to this segment.
I know. Sia, it's your time to shine, man. Where did you go? Can't be said by Leanne or said by Ben.
No, a guy's got to do what a guy's got to do, Gareth.
What, were you taking a pee?
No.
What's going on?
I was being the producer of the show.
All right. Good.
Yes, thank you.
What's said by Sia this morning?
Said by Searing this morning, there is a new trend started by ambulance workers that is stretching worldwide. Very similar to Make a Dream.
Reach for a dream.
There we go.
Make-A-Wish Foundation in America.
What is it called? One of those things? That's it. So these ambulance workers have started noticing that in their job, they deal with a lot of unfortunate things, which includes dealing with people that are on their deathbeds. And they've thought, if we can help these people in any way, of course, health-wise, but particularly if they know people are going to die, they want to make sure that they have a peaceful process to wherever you think people go once they did, but including granting them, you've got to be politically correct these days, but including granting people on their deathbeds their final wishes and making them come true. So it's called the Ambulance Wish Foundation, and it was started by the Dutch, and they simply transport people wherever they want to go before they die. And I think it's quite sweet, because
you want to die in a certain place, they'll take you there.
Like a park.
Okay.
Yeah, and
wheel you out in your bed in the park.
Yeah, and for example, you know that you have been bedridden at home, and you've been going through tons and tons of cancer treatment, and now you're going to the hospital, and most likely you think, this is the last time, not going to leave.
I've thought about that before. Who wants to die in a hospital? I mean, it's very morbid for a Monday morning.
It's a little... But I think it's quite sweet what these people are doing. But before that, they have been taking people to bird parks. They've been taking people who want to see the Mona Lisa. They've been taking people just to their favorite soccer team's stadium for the last time before they die. And yeah, I said it was started by the Dutch. And now it's spread to, 270 medical volunteers. And this organization facilitates about 5 or 6 trips daily for people across the world. It was started back in 2007, and so far the team has fulfilled more than 7,000 hospital wishes for people. And, that's everything beautiful. From going to the aquarium to the zoo, people who just want to see the ocean for the last time. I think it's so, so sweet. This organization has
even... Bit of a downer, though, for people who are having a swim.
Well...
I don't think the point is to die at that venue.
No.
Yes, I know.
It's for the final wish. This organization has even facilitated a renewal of vows.
Okay. What would you do?
I don't know.
What would you do? Come on, choose a place.
What would you want to see one more time? Or if you hadn't seen it at all before you die?
I would love to be... by the ocean. I've always loved the idea of dying by the sea. I don't know why.
All right.
Dressed in all white.
We'll tell people in the year 2077.
I repeat those words. Hey, what will I be? I'll be 82. Yeah, fair innings. Yeah, 2077. That's good.
Oh, my word.
Sia will be wheeled out into the ocean.
Yes,
into the ocean.
Yeah, right in.
In a white caftan, and I'll be good.
With a long beard. like Methuselah.
So kudos to these people in the Netherlands. It's now spread to Germany, Israel, Brazil, England, Japan, and Ecuador as well. Hey, the Ambulance Wish Foundation, even granting one little old lady one last trip to the casino. That's your set by Sia for this morning.
All right, very good. Okay, when we come back, we'll get into some news. Leanne's got lots of stories for us this morning. It's Monday, cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.